You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Imagine Dragons. Loom. World Tour. Live in Salt Lake City, Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater, Friday, October 11th. The brand new album, Loom, is available everywhere June 28th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. For more, visit ImagineDragonsMusic.com.
And now, it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Happy Friday. Happy Friday over there, Benjamin.
How are you?
Doing great.
Yeah?
Just plugging away on a Friday. So excited for my favorite 8:30 start.
Is this your last 8:30 start of the year?
No, don't they have one more?
I know they have another road LA game.
And two Golden State games? One Golden State game? Hold on.
Two Golden State games. One's on Sunday, so it's a 6:30. So it's not an 8:30 p.m.
Well, they don't do 8:30 starts hardly anymore. This might actually be our first one.
The NBA kind of across the league has kicked everything back a half hour on Fridays and Saturdays.
The next game at the Clippers, Friday, April 12th, is also 8:30. So this Friday and next Friday.
Friday, Saturday games have turned into starting a half hour later than tip-off. So again, obviously with the Pacific time zone, that's 7:30 there, 8:30 here. But you're right, we don't get a lot of, we didn't have a lot because the Jazz weren't on TNT this year. So no 8:30 games.
Well, even the TNT,
no one cared to see them.
Even the TNT ones are 8 o'clock now.
Yeah,
they used to be all 8:30, Ben, until about 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe it was whenever you know when it was. It was the year after LeBron went to LA.
Right. He was like, "Enough of this."
No. Not.
I'm not doing this that late anymore.
I would love for that to be the reason, but. No, they decided LeBron on in the middle of the night on the East Coast wasn't good marketing.
Yeah.
Move it up a half an hour. They moved the TNT and ESPN's whole slots up a half an hour. And so now usually the latest game we get is at 8. Unless it's in the Pacific time zone on a Friday, apparently.
Yeah.
Or a Saturday.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Pacific time zone games. And it has to be a team good enough. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something else happening at Crypto Arena earlier in the day that they had to bump it back even a half hour.
Bounced it back. I think it's an interesting experiment they've done with weekend games. I personally don't like it.
I'm with you.
I don't know. It's just so easy. Like, the game's going to start at 7 unless it's on national TV. It's such an easy thing to, like, set your watch by.
Yeah, you just know when they're on.
Or, you know what? You know what's funny, Ben? For you and I, they went a half an hour in the wrong direction. We've been advocating for more afternoon games on the weekends. And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll move the time. Now we're going to move it back.
Move it earlier. Let's start moving things up in the day.
Up in the day.
Let's start moving up in the day. Let's do your homework on a Friday night, meaning get it done early.
I'm telling you, Saturday at 3.
Hey, I'm telling you, something's going on in Detroit. They play every weekend. If you have League Pass and you're looking for something to watch, unfortunately, it's the horrendous Pistons. They're on every weekend day at 3 p.m. It's great. It's not even that late. It's 3 p.m. their time. It's like 1 p.m. our time. You can always find a Pistons game on in the middle of the day. Watched way too much Pistons basketball in my life because I have nothing to do on the weekends.
I'm sorry.
So.
It's great marketing, though.
Yeah, they're on. They're on. Watch Malachi Flynn score 50 points off the bench. Who? Exactly.
Exactly. Joining us now, she joins us every single Friday. She covers the Utes for KSLSports.com. She's the one and only Michelle Botkin. What's going on, Michelle?
Not much. Just getting prepared for regionals for Utah Gymnastics.
Michelle, can we wrap up the Coeur d'Alene story with the Utah women's basketball team and what the latest developments are? I know there was some obvious and ridiculous pushback against the women, and now it sounds like the police have actually come out and said, yeah, there's audio of it.
Yeah. So I think it was kind of late Wednesday that statement came out, or early Thursday, but there is audio proof. You can visibly hear whatever was hurled. I don't think it takes a lot of imagination to know what was probably hurled their way. I think the statement said they have like 35 different videos or something like that that they've looked at and kind of been able to piece things together. But look, guys, like the moral of this story is just because you're not hearing anything doesn't mean that the evidence doesn't exist. There's a reason why the police don't put stuff out immediately, and it's because they have to do their homework. They have to investigate it. They have to look into it. And just because it's not instantly public knowledge, and I get that we live in an age where we expect instant gratification on everything, it doesn't mean that something isn't happening or something didn't happen or, you know, things of that nature. So, to me, that's the biggest takeaway. Obviously, people are still going to push back, believe what they want to believe. I know that there's a lot of people that want to believe that racism does not exist at all. But, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that say something completely opposite that actually were there and experienced what happened. And hopefully we're on the path to getting them some justice.
So something that continues to bug me, Michelle, and apparently I'm the only one, but let me know if you're catching my drift here, taking the abhorrent behavior out of it for a second. Like, I even read a national write-up over this thing where they're like, oh, they're staying in Coeur d'Alene because the men's NCAA tournament was being hosted and a youth volleyball tournament. And that's why they got bumped. And it makes me rewind history. And do you remember, what was it, Michelle, like 2 or 3 years ago where the pictures of the weight room and the facilities for the women's NCAA tournament went viral and it was just so awful and terrible, and obviously the women's game was getting the shaft. Well, are you kidding me, Ben? We looked up how many hotel rooms there are in Spokane when this story came out. You're telling me that you can't bump some of the youth volleyball teams? So, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, if the NCAA can't make accommodations for them to stay somewhere in the same dang state as where they're playing, like, why was that even allowed to happen?
Move.
Does that make any sense? Yeah, but you can't host it if you can't find 10 hotel rooms for the team to stay somewhere in the same state as their venue. That's outrageous. And I feel like people read the volleyball thing and they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. It's like, no, that doesn't make sense.
You know, I mean, interestingly enough, some of those volleyball players were staying at my hotel that they stuck the media in. And I mean, even that was kind of a ways from the venue. I was a little surprised. Like, usually you get put within walking distance, right? So you don't have to like worry about the hassle of cars and all that kind of stuff. It was a little bit of a drive. So, but I do agree with you. And I think that part hasn't been talked about enough. And it was actually a conversation I had with a friend the other day that, you know, as egregious as what happened was, why are we not talking more about the fact that the NCAA okayed this?
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah. And to your point, it kind of does, I think, showcase once again that there's a lot less appreciation for the women's game than the men's game. And I get it. It's burgeoning. It's not quite the moneymaker, but like there's interest there, and there would be more interest there if you would treat them right. So I think there's some things that need to be worked on there. And then, of course, again, even if you have to stick them someplace else, you know, to me, this is a use your noggin moment. And there's not many of us that don't know the history of Eastern Idaho and what kind of happens there and who's been camped out there. And to stick teams that have diversity, typically have a lot of diversity. You know, we're not talking about like the men's swim team where everybody's probably white and there's not going to be an incident. Nobody's going to really say anything if they're there. You know, you're talking about teams that typically have a lot of diversity. They bring in a lot of people from all over the place. And to stick them in a place that has a reputation for not being terribly kind to minorities was really dumb. That was just a dumb, dumb move. You could have, I think there has to be a small town somewhere else, right, that could have made those accommodations. But, well, you know, we'll see what comes of this. Hopefully some positive changes come out of this. But it's also the NCAA, so who knows?
Well, sorry, excuse me, for starting the show that way. That's not how anyone wanted to talk, and, you know, obviously, but very important, and glad there's making progress on it. Let's talk about the actual basketball teams now, still off the court, but what is the transfer portal look like for the Utah women? I mean, do we know what to expect from that roster? Obviously, Alyssa Peely leaving and going to the WNBA is a huge, huge loss. She's the best player in team history, but what do they look like next year, and will they go out to the transfer portal to target new players?
Oh yeah, they'll definitely go shopping in the transfer portal and try to kind of bolster the roster. They did have one girl leave. Lonnie White has entered the transfer portal. It's that sad because I think Lonnie was really coming along, but it's understandable. She would have been behind Gianna Neatkins and Maddie Wilkie next year, most likely. And so it's, you know, it's just about wanting more play time. And to be honest, I don't think she's going to get it at Utah at this point. There's too many people ahead of her. So, you know, bummer, but that also opens up space, you know, to maybe find a Peely replacement or two, you know, find someone to help bolster Anish Vieira, now that Izzy Palmer's also gone. And Deja Young's also gone. She kind of played kind of both spots a little bit there. So, you know, you have a little bit more room to bring in actual needs with Lonnie's departure. But I still expect this team to be really good. Again, they're returning a really solid core with Gianna, with Jenna Johnson, Kennedy McQueen, Maddie Wilkie will be back. Like, those girls have all shown high-level ability. It's just about bringing in, you know, some of those key pieces to really kind of bolster that roster, while also hoping to see, you know, more advancement from a girl like Reese Ross, who showed flashes last year, but still, you know, needs to improve a little bit. I would expect she's going to look much different as a sophomore than she did as a freshman this year. Just things like that, that I think will go a long way to kind of keeping this team, this Utah women's team, in a very good spot.
So David James on his show, Michelle, has been throwing around kind of a figure he's been hearing on what you need for an NIL budget to have an NCAA tournament men's team. And he's been hearing around $3 million. Do we have any idea, and they don't have to report it, which is so funny to me, but do we have any idea what the NIL budget Utah men's basketball is working with?
You know, I haven't heard directly for the very reason you stated. They don't have to. But I would imagine, especially after kind of seeing, you know, I think some results that everybody has wanted to see for a while from this program, from Craig Smith. Again, obviously they didn't make the ultimate goal, but there's signs that they're kind of working towards that, right? And so I think people are probably a little more willing to invest. And I think, you know, there's also that knowledge that you're going to the Big 12 and the competition is actually going to be stiffer for you in that league than probably in the Pac-12. And so some real moves need to be made, as well as keeping guys in-house. And that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Obviously, we saw Raleigh Wooster hit the portal, and I think that's manageable for Utah. Obviously, you would like to keep a guy like him just because he has so much experience. But then it kind of lends itself to the importance of keeping Davon Smith on the roster. And there seems to be some optimism that he will stay. Obviously, there's always a chance, too, that he could hit the portal. Who, you know, you just never know with people whispering in people's ears and throwing out figures and whatnot. You know, he may hear a number that's just too good to be true. and make that jump. But I think as of right now, there is optimism that he will stay with the program and that they can kind of build that roster around him with hopefully good NIL funds that can not only keep Davon happy, but also, you know, bring in some pieces to kind of work with him.
Unfortunately, the Utah football team made some news this week because Levani DeMooney is out for the season, it sounds like, with an injury. That's never something you want to hear. A, how does Utah replace him? B, what other names have you heard as far as positives coming out of spring camp for Utah?
Yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, injuries are always the name of the game when you're talking about especially football, where it's a contact sport. Knock on wood, you know, that's hopefully one of the only serious injuries we hear about for this team after last year. But, you know, thankfully that is a position group that runs pretty deep for Utah. They feel really good about the talent they have. I wouldn't be surprised if they hit the portal and maybe bring in a guy as well, just to kind of make sure they have bodies there. But I don't know that that's necessarily necessary unless they find someone that they really like. But the next name in line there sounds like Sione Fotu is the one that I keep hearing a lot about, a guy that came back from his mission last year, a little bit rusty. I think fans can probably expect him to look a lot more how they would expect him to, and Utah's going to need him to kind of step into that role. So, you know, and then from there, there's, you know, other guys, Trey Reynolds, I'm trying to think of other Josh Calvert. They're going to need those guys to kind of, you know, step up now a little bit more. So, you know, it puts a little strain, but it's nothing to panic about. Disappointing, obviously, but again, it's as long as that's it, that's not going to hurt Utah in the slightest. But then looking towards the positives, you know, I keep hearing great things about both of the younger quarterbacks behind Cam Rising. Isaac Wilson and, of course, Brandon Rose have been making great strides in spring ball by all accounts. And so it's been a really good competition. It sounds like, you know, Wilson's just come in and has been so confident and willing to learn as a freshman, which is a great thing to hear. He's not intimidated by the fact that Brandon Rose has a year or two on him in the system. And then, of course, we're also hearing that Brandon Rose is just looking more comfortable because he's been there a couple of years. And he was kind of in the running, essentially, to be the starter last year until he got hurt. So it sounds like things are clicking for him and that Isaac's just absorbing everything really, really well. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the decision is there. But, I mean, just overall, it sounds like Utah has done a really great job building this roster. There aren't a lot of areas of concern, I would say. It feels like they finally kind of addressed the depth in most areas. And I would say the other good news, too, is it feels like they're making strides in that defensive backfield. It's, you know, a pretty big project to have to replace guys like Miles Battle, and of course Sione Vaki and Cole Bishop. You know, that's a good chunk of talent that you're having to replace, and by all accounts, guys are stepping up. Guys that they've recruited in as transfers are doing what they hope they would do. So those are things that you kind of like to hear, and obviously with spring ball wrapping up, you still have all summer and fall to kind of work out those bugs. But it sounds like they have a good idea of who they're going to go with and move forward with. And that was something that I think they really needed to accomplish this spring. And it's nice to know that that's not going to be a lingering question for them heading into fall camp.
Michelle, thank you. As always, we look forward to our conversations with you each and every Friday. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Have a great rest of your show.
Thanks, Michelle.
Will do. Michelle Bodkin covers the Utes for KSLSports.com. Appreciate her work.
The secondary is going to be a big issue for Utah. It's going to be a huge question mark, specifically the safeties. But
yeah, well, when was the last time they didn't find a safety?
Yeah, right. They will find at least one.
There are certain positions with Utah, and I think you can throw BYU into this convo too, that I'm not worried about it.
Not worried about BYU's linebackers.
I'm not worried about Utah's D-line. I'm not really worried about their secondary.
Yeah.
Not really all that worried about it.
Yep.
Now, can Utah find a quarterback after Cam Rising? I'm a little worried about that.
Yeah, do they even have a backup?
Should be worried about receivers, always.
Constantly. No, I don't. Don't worry about them. You're worried about something that's unfixable.
Maybe. Yeah, no, that there's some truth in that take.
Sounds like the Sun's supposed to explode at some point in the right. in the future.
I mean, it's just not.
Can't worry about it.
It's not their priority.
Safety, I can't do anything about that.
Safety, however, especially considering that the defensive coordinator played that position at Utah. They're going to find somebody.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
I don't think that'll be a thing.
But it won't be as good as it was last year. So
how do you know?
You'll have to compensate.
I wouldn't take that off the table either.
I feel very safe saying the Utah secondary will not be as good as the one that featured Sione Vaki and Cole Bishop next year.
You had no idea who Sione Vaki was at this point last year.
That's absolutely right. I did say Cole Bishop was going to be the best player on the team last year.
All right, he was good. Sure, you could have seen that going in, but who's to say that there's not somebody just as good as Sione
Vaki? Was their best offensive player.
Right. Had no idea.
They didn't either.
Right now, that guy's going to the league. So who's to say there's somebody not like that on the roster right now? I wouldn't count it out.
3 weeks away from the NFL draft? 2 weeks and 6 days? 27th, something like that? 26th, 24th?
Well, they're taking 3 weeks for it this year, right?
Yeah, they do. When is the NFL draft? April 25th.
So it's coming up. Yeah, of course it's coming up. Because
20 days.
You know why I know that? Because... it's funny, Ben, my youngest is going to turn 3 at the end of this month. You know what I did when I was in the hospital?
Watch that draft.
I watched the 2021 NFL draft.
Good for you.
It's the Zach Wilson draft.
Oh, exciting.
It was exciting.
Yeah, it's those couple of days in the hospital where you have nowhere to go was not the worst day.
Dude, we were so bored and so grateful to be bored, if that makes any sense. And it was still kind of during the pandemic, so like we couldn't have visitors and stuff. And maybe for the first time since I was like 13, I actually watched the NFL draft. I can't say I watched all of it, but I watched most of it.
Yeah. That's a good time to not be busy.
It's seriously.
Hard to squeeze.
Grateful for it.
Hard to squeeze giving birth into other plans.
Right. So, all right. Big thanks to Michelle for jumping on with us as always. Coming up next, top three stories of the day, KSLSports.com. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben. Want to remind you about the Hercules Hero of the Week. Nominate the youth sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Time for the top three stories of the day, kslsports.com. Sarah, where do you want to start today?
Number one, the Jazz face the Clippers tonight.
8:30 tip. 7:30 pregame here on the station.
No veterans. No Jordan Clarkson, no Larry Markkanen, no John Collins, and the other veteran in his second season, Walker Kessler, out with a broken nose.
Veteran.
Yeah, more than 1 year. So, shorthanded again, we heard him coming in there, Bryce Sensabaugh. He's been playing well, 22 points each of the last two games. And like,
and shot it well.
Yeah, actually like kind of playing well, not, oh, he, you know, Kenneth Lofton, also a Jazz man who's going to be in uniform tonight, I would imagine. Scored 42 points in the final game of the regular season last year for the Memphis Grizzlies. Well, he got 30 shots. You know, Bryce Sensabaugh's not out there just hucking bad shots. Like, he's playing basketball. It looks like he knows what he's doing. So I'll be watching him tonight. We will have to keep an eye on whether or not the Clippers have a full roster. Kawhi Leonard's been out as well. He didn't play last night in their surprising win over the Denver Nuggets.
102-100. I was going to bring that up. Second night of the back-to-back for the Clippers. I would guess we don't see any of their normal players because that seems to have been the routine lately when playing the Utah Jazz.
And you ought to be able to beat the Jazz without them because the Jazz are trying to lose.
I don't know. Rusty could lose any game.
Rusty can. Put some respect on his name. He doesn't like when you make fun of his name, so I will not.
I'm not making fun of anything. Rusty is a nickname
for Russell. Yeah.
I didn't call him Westbrick.
Whoa!
Even though I find that hilarious.
Get him on the phone. He's going to belittle you.
Can I say this? There's got to be a delicate balance between sensitive players and putting up with abuse?
Of course.
Like, listen, the fans can call you Westbrook. I'm sorry.
Correct. It's a like, play it's on not, your name. It's not disrespecting your family name.
It actually has something to do with the basketball
game. It's not erasing
game.
You. I'm with you.
Like, you're just being sensitive.
Correct. He's being very sensitive in that situation.
I'm not saying in all his fan interactions have been oversensitivity because I don't know. That's
no.
not the point I'm trying to make.
In fact, we
but
know not.
There is a difference between I'm here to watch a basketball game and abusive treatment.
Yes.
So can we – I don't know how we figure out the line there, but listen, somebody calling you Russell Westbrook is not – that's not – yeah, that's not disrespecting your grandfather or whatever he said.
Correct. Correct. It's not erasure of your family.
No.
It's making fun that you shoot a lot of bricks.
You shoot a lot of bricks.
Yeah. And your last name is Brooke.
And you know what? You're a controversial player in a sense that you – the way you play brings a lot of attention. And the way you – are salty all the time, brings about a lot of attention. I'm surprised that players are that sensitive. But then, you know, you look at the other end, and you shouldn't have to put up with abuse either. So, I don't know. Maybe he'd be upset that a radio moron is calling him Rusty in Salt Lake because I find it funny. But Rusty is a nickname.
For Russell.
For Russell. It'd be like if I called James Worthy Jim Worthy.
Jimmy. Yeah. Part of the name.
Jimmy Harden.
Yeah. So we will watch. Clippers do need this game. They need to make sure they hold on to that 4 seed. They do not want to fall to the 5th seed and potentially start a playoff series on the road at Dallas. So they have motivation to win. They may not have a lot of motivation to play all their players.
I would guess they will not.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see Kawhi tonight, for example.
Yeah. Definitely not Kawhi. That would be stunning.
He needs, if the Clippers have a shot, I think it all hinges on him, as usual. I mean, we can get focused on James Harden and Paul George and whatever, but Kawhi's still their best player. He's still, in my opinion, one of the best players in the league, although, man, that take is getting old fast. So we'll see.
When he's healthy, he's as good as – he's still, yeah, one of the five or six best players in the league. So he's got to be healthy.
Yeah. All right.
Number two, the Arizona Coyotes owner – has sought out potential buyers.
Bunch of news yesterday came out. First of all, that he is potentially looking to find a new buyer, but also there is an auction coming up on June 27th for land in northeastern Phoenix that the Arizona Coyotes are said to be targeting to purchase to develop that new arena.
All right.
This is courtesy of our friends and sister affiliate in Arizona, arizonasports.com.
Yeah, okay.
We should get these dudes on the phone. Let's do that, Sarah. Not right now, but let's get these dudes on the phone for next week.
Talk to them about what's going on with Coyotes. I think if there was a future...
See if they can teach us all their best players.
If there was a future for the Coyotes in Phoenix, I think they would have found it by now.
Yes, probably. There have been similar situations that have come down to the wire. Sacramento, notably, came down to the wire with the Kings.
Agreed. Now, was Sacramento playing at Sacramento State's gym?
No, they were not. No, it had not gotten that bad. And you know what they ended up doing? Changing owners. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a huge part of it, is they moved off of...
That's the reason they stayed.
The brothers and moved to Vivek. So, I don't know. Utah's going to get a hockey team. They didn't blindly approve this $1 billion with another background billion lined up.
I agree with you.
Because they were going to guess that a hockey team was going to get here. I'm not sure the hopes of getting a hockey team are worth investing that type of money unless you know a hockey team is coming. It really is just a question of, well, do the Coyotes want to make it easy or does the NHL have to expand?
Right.
And either way. Probably either way.
I would think so. But, yeah, I don't think there's – I mean, if it's going to be the Coyotes, that certainly wouldn't surprise me because I don't think they have a future in Phoenix. Nobody goes to the games when they did have a stadium, right?
That's why they're playing at Arizona State, like you said, like a 8,000-seat stadium or something crazy.
Oh, it's less. It's like five.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And PK was saying they just put it up in the parking lot for the Arizona State team. So, yeah, I do believe that. I think they would have found a solution in Phoenix if – what, are they going to outbid everybody for that land and then pony up another $1 billion to build a building?
Gambadoro, the owner of the Coyotes, Gambadoro is the writer for Arizona Sports. Pardon me. Marullo is the owner of the Coyotes, is seeking upwards of $1 billion for the franchise.
Gambo. He's a legend.
Yeah. My apologies.
Sports franchises are going for a lot of money. I don't know what the latest hockey franchise to sell and what the price tag was, but $1 billion sounds about right.
Yep. It's what franchises cost.
Yep. I wonder what the NHL expansion fee is. Because that might be interesting. You could buy the Coyotes for $1 billion, but if the expansion fee is $500 million, well, you'd certainly way rather have an expansion franchise.
Last time the NHL expanded, the Vegas Golden Knights ownership group had to pay $500 million in 2017, while the Kraken paid $650 million in 2021.
Oh, I'd take that over $1 billion.
So it might be $800 million, but that's $200 million off.
That's a lot of dough.
That's 3 years of your salary.
And you get to create your own thing. You don't have to take
what they have.
Damaged goods.
Then again, I was thinking about this last night. Like, do you have to hire 60 new people to come in and just run the office? Like,
yes.
You need a new social media person. Like, yes. Just all of these things. Yes. Just like, oh.
Sales staffs, administrators. Look, yes, all of it.
There's a lot of reasons I'm not a billionaire. That's one of them. The idea of just like, I got to do all this. You know who I'm calling? Spherion.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Just get Tim on the horn and be like, man, I need a whole front office for a hockey franchise. All right. Well, you got 2 days.
Send me your best people. Tim would have put together a title contender in a year.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Well, the kind of dough that kind of job would create. Oh, yeah. He'd move heaven and earth. He'd get Barry Melrose medical treatment so he could come run the team.
He's got everyone back.
I think hockey's going to happen. It feels almost inevitable. I don't know if it's the Coyotes or not, but I don't think the Coyotes are staying in Phoenix.
Maybe Scottsdale.
I don't. Arizona. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. I don't think it's staying there. All right, next.
Number three, the Final Four matchups tip off tomorrow.
Tomorrow, setting up the Monday night championship game. Excited to see this unfold. Again, I suspect it's going to be Purdue versus UConn in the title game, but NC State is still playing somehow, and DJ Burns has become a household name and a favorite of everyone watching basketball.
I am all in on the Wolfpack. I will be rooting mightily for them to take down Purdue.
I like their odds of getting the championship more via Purdue than I would had they were facing UConn. Purdue is far more beatable.
How would you guard the big fella?
Edie?
Uh-huh.
You got to throw a lot of doubles at him, and you've got to hope that, A, your guys are disciplined enough to not just foul him. I know everyone complains about the foul. Watch the game. Watch him off the ball. If you're going to watch the game, watch him off the ball. Guys, he gets fouled 40 times a game. He gets fouled 10 times more than they call. I know everyone says his whistle is so soft. Watch him off the ball. They foul him the second he crosses the three-point line. He gets fouled nonstop. So you've got to have a really disciplined trap to get the ball out of his hands. But what you can't do is when you're used to being able to swipe the ball low, his hands, when you do it that low, are eye level with the referee. So they're going to call it every time. So you've got to be really disciplined not to foul him. You've got to trap him. And then you have to hope that Purdue's shot makers don't make shots around him. Because the other thing that I like about Zach Edey and why I think he actually can make it in the NBA is something you and I talked about a lot over the last couple of days, which is you have to be able to run your offense through your big man in the NBA now. Edey is a great passer because he's willing and he sees the entire floor because he's 7'4". He does not play with great players around him, and he is slow and lumbering. But you can give him the ball, and he will make the right pass out of it. So that's what makes him such a good player. It's not like he's just a big oaf who lays the ball in the hoop. Like, he's a really good passer, and he sees where the help is coming from. So I don't know. You hope DJ Burns can get underneath him, but, I mean, great Osabor, who doesn't have the same body of DJ Burns, but is a big, strong kid, and ideally could get some leverage underneath him, just got washed out of the game. I mean, he toasted great.
It's funny. I would do the exact opposite.
Okay.
I would not want disciplined defense at all. First of all, I wouldn't have DJ Hughes anywhere near him.
Burns.
DJ Burns anywhere near him, because that's the one guy I don't want fouling out. I'd put basically anybody else on him, and I'd say the best way that I'm going to limit this guy, because he's going to get the whistle anyway, is if he can't move because his ribs are bruised.
Okay.
So if you're going to foul him.
Giving him the business.
If you're going to foul him.
Of course.
I mean.
And then you need to hope he has one of his off-shooting nights.
If you're
going
to foul him, try to break his arm.
And you need to hope he's 12 of 22 from the free throw line, which he can do. He is above 60%. He's a decent free throw shooter, but he is prone to some bad nights
as well. If he's shooting with his left hand because three of his fingers are broken, he's not going to be as good. I honestly, I think the whole disciplined and play without fouling, I don't need. I think that's tempting to say. I don't think it's easy to do against him in particular, nor do I think it's necessarily all that effective.
He had 40 and 16 in the last game. Like, he's unreal. Zach Edey is awesome.
He's just really big. And so he's going to draw a lot of whistles because he's really big. And you're right. He's skilled.
He was 14 of 22 from the free throw line. So again, to that
But if he's going to go to the line anyway, then why not make it count?
Sure.
And actually, you know, I'm talking about DJ. I don't want to screw up his last name. I'm just going to stay with DJ.
Burnsy.
if I'm DJ, I say, hey, you don't get into this act. You stay clear. We're going to have you play center field defensively or whatever. But he's the one guy that can't afford to get into foul trouble. And then I try to play Edey as physically as humanly possible, because if you try to play without fouling, he's going to go to the line anyway, and you're not going to do anything to throw him off. Haven't you ever heard the haven't you ever taken the old man basketball strategy, where as soon as your guy pulls up for three the first time, you aggressively flail to create some pain, and then say, "Oh, that's a foul on me," because
next time they're not gonna
every
shoot
single time they shoot, they're going to be thinking about you coming at their midsection instead of
trying
if they're going
to
make their shot.
Worry their follow through. Sure.
I mean, honestly, you talk about how dominant he is. In college, I don't see any other way to stop him than play him physically, push him off his spot, make him unbalanced, make him earn it from the line. What else are you going to do? He's going to go to the line anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's.
So no discipline.
Do you want him to take?
I mean, go Alex Caruso on Rudy Gobert, like box out the side of his knee.
Do you want him to take 18 clean looks, or do you want him to go to the free throw line 20 times? That's just kind of the gambit.
I'll take the 20 times at the line, even though, painful to watch. That's the best way to beat him.
Man, he took 21 shots in the last game against Tennessee and 22 free throws. He's awesome. He's a spectacular college basketball player.
Yeah, he's huge. I'll give you that.
He is.
And he's more skilled than your average stiff.
Absolutely.
But still a stiff nonetheless.
He's big and slow, but he is unstoppable. I love big men. I love watching big guys. I grew up watching the NBA in the 90s, so I've always liked the big guys. So it's been fun to watch him. It's been fun to watch Kling, and it's been fun to watch Burns.
And I'd love to see UConn lose. I don't know. Beating everybody by 30, so it's probably not likely. And I don't think I've ever rooted for Alabama ever in anything. But
you might beat them tomorrow.
Roll Tide. all right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you about Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. Also, your chance to win big every week on the KSL Sports Zone's Win Ticket Wednesday. This week, or next week, I should say, you can win a pair of tickets to go see Sam Hunt at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on August 3rd. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. Ben, I've got a little random story for you here. You see that your guy Shohei Ohtani hit his first home run as a Dodger?
I did.
And some lady caught the ball?
Yep.
Did you see how that lady was treated?
I did not. Hopefully with respect.
No, they leaned on her big time to give up the ball. And they actually, according to her, intentionally separated her from her husband.
Yeah.
To
get her to give up the ball.
And I guess she got some signed hats and some signed balls and a bat. But they basically threatened her that they wouldn't authenticate the ball if it left the stadium, which if they don't authenticate it, that basically means that it's
worthless.
So this is from her side, but it seemed like they were really leaning on her to give up the ball, which could have been, people are estimating it could be worth as much as $100,000.
At least, yeah, and you will wait on it for a while. If Shohei ends up continuing to be Shohei and evolves into one of the greatest baseball players we've ever seen, yeah, his first home run in a Dodgers uniform could be $500,000 with what Sports Memorabilia is doing.
So apparently they offered her two signed hats at first and ended up agreeing on two signed hats, a signed bat, and a ball. And again, according to her, intentionally separated her from her husband, which, by the way, like, I mean, usual gender roles aside, big decisions as a couple.
Yeah, it's a family decision. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. Not one person who's being leaned on to, you know, like that scene from The Office where Dwight is employing that sales tactic where he's trying to sell his car or whatever. And he's like, buy it now. You're going to buy it. You buy it. Done.
And then, like, and Andy buys it.
Yeah, and Andy buys it.
Yeah.
That's what they did to this poor lady. Yeah.
You know what you got to do?
Are you kidding?
Call your lawyer.
Right
first
there.
Thing I do, I'm calling my lawyer. I can't answer any of your questions until I get my lawyer. I know that's not the police. I'm saying the same thing.
And if you're saying you're not going to give me a certificate, well, I guess I'm not leaving then.
By the way, I don't have a lawyer, so I need your wife's number.
You got it, pal. If you're ever in this situation, you give us a call. But you know what? Like, I guess I'm particularly bothered by the team's actions because that's part of baseball. That's a part of your game. That's a part of the way you market
it. That's one of the fun reasons to go. Right.
And then in these circumstances where these important balls are given back to the player or the franchise or whatever, usually it's an act of, what's the word I'm looking here for, Ben? Like, I love Shohei. I want him to have this ball.
Yes, right. It's generosity.
And if you can give me a couple of things for my nice gesture,
yeah,
that would be terrific.
This ball belongs to you. It's your first hit or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
But throw in some season tickets or something just because I'm really being nice. It's... If they give the ball back, it's supposed to be this kind of sweet thing, connection with the athlete. And if they don't give the ball back, well, that's their choice.
They're right.
That's their right.
Yep.
That's baseball.
Shame on the Dodgers.
Shame on the Dodgers.
And a pretty pithy return. A couple of signed hats from Shohei. And he apparently didn't even come out to meet her. Come on.
Come on.
Worst case scenario, give her some gambling tips.
There are a couple of... couple of horses that might come in.
Give her some juiced picks.
What's going on?
So she can make up some of the money she lost by giving up your baseball.
Well, you're going to want to bet number four at Santa Anita in the fifth race.
We're playing the Braves in the next series. I'm going to throw the second game.
I'm going to have a rough game too.
Just saying.
Rough. Like right. 0 for 4.
Can I have the ball back? I'm bunting with the bases loaded, no outs.
But yeah,
it's not going to go well.
I'm disappointed in the Dodgers. I'm sure they wanted the ball
absolutely.
Back for Shohei, or I'm sure they wanted it or whatever. But come on, these are your fans. This is part of the game. You can't do that.
Nope, can't do it. Put the ball inside your clothing so they cannot get it back from you. Turn your phone on. Call your lawyer. You get to leave. They don't get to kidnap you for having a baseball.
But that threat of, we're
absolutely.
Not going
it's
to.
I've been in that situation where I've agreed to things I shouldn't have agreed to because I was intimidated by people. Absolutely. That's a very human experience, and this is much scarier. So I have a lot of sympathy for her, and shame on the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Brooklyn Dodgers? Well, you're letting the L.A. Dodgers off the hook there.
The whole history.
The whole kid
going all the way back. They should have stayed in Brooklyn is my hot take.
Okay.
They should have experienced an earthquake.
You know, that happened a while ago, that move.
It's like when Iowa joined the Big Ten.
That was
similar era.
Yeah, it was when Iowa joined the Big Ten. Been that way for a while. All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. We'll talk some Jazz basketball, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards. Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's got it better than us?
No!
Best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Maybe I should rethink calling Pitt McAfee Armpit. Ben, the...
It no longer applies.
The executive, though, that he got in that showdown with, who made him put a shirt on, is now fired. Just got canned at the mouse. The mouse got rid of Pitt Armpit's arch nemesis.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that? And then second real quick story I want to bring up with you, Ben, and then we can start talking some Jazz and some NBA. Did you see that LSU star Haley Van Lith has hit the transfer portal?
Okay. She was the one who notoriously threw up her arms in the famous video now in front of Caitlin Clark after hitting the ninth three.
I would have transferred before that game even ended. You want to know why?
Kim, take me out.
Kim totally hung her out to dry.
Yes, she did.
Like, I don't understand how, and no offense to Iowa, the rest of their team or whatever, but how do you not run three people at Caitlin Clark on any play? It's not fair to say, hey, you, Haley, go take Caitlin out of the game. That's not a good game plan. That's not gonna work. I feel terrible for her because she was embarrassed on national television in what was bad game planning. Not bad play on her part, but bad game planning.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about what happened because they opened the game, and I don't know if this was somebody not listening in the several walkthroughs and practices they'd gone over, but they were going under on screens on Caitlin Clark, which is like, actually, Caitlin Clark was pretty terrible inside the paint the other night. She was not making her layups very well. She was not finishing near the rim. She was cooking from three, though.
That's coaching. That's coaching.
So that is my thought. Like, did Kib Mulkey tell them to go under? And they're like, we're going to see if Caitlin can beat us. The problem is, we see this with the Jazz. This is one of the major issues with the Jazz right now. A player sees a couple of shots go in early in the game because the Jazz just don't bring this intensity in the first quarter that they have in, like, the third quarters lately. And once a team sees the ball go in the first quarter, they're on the rest of the game. These players are too good. Caitlin Clark is too good. If the ball goes in early, she's on the rest of the night. You have to make it hard early. So exactly like you said, where you would hit somebody in the midsection if they were a shooter in an old guy game, you want her thinking about it every time she shoots. If she thinks it's going in every time she shoots it because you went under on the first three possessions and she knocked down threes, it's going to be a long night.
Oh, going under against Caitlin Clark is ludicrous. But your point about the Jazz is interesting because they can simultaneously go under every screen but still get dunked on most possessions, which is, I think, hard to do.
It's bad at everything.
Like, you shouldn't be... Like, the idea, if you go under the screen, is that you're not going to get beat to the rim.
You go... Right, exactly, right. Like, you back off, so...
That's the idea. That's the point.
So you're there to meet them in the mid-range, so they don't have a head of steam.
Correct. That's the idea.
And then they're still just dissecting you.
And they're still smoking you at the rim and cannon threes in your face. Like, it's the worst.
It's a problem.
It's a huge problem. The Jazz defensively, I feel like you and I are kind of the only ones that talk about how bad it's been defensively. I mean, if you really want to look at why the Jazz have lost how many in a row, you know, we can focus on Lowry's been out and they haven't been able to score and all this stuff. they can't guard a chair.
No, historically bad defense. Historically,
like, historically bad. Worst in the league since the trade deadline by a mile.
Yeah, I can pull that up. No,
and,
it's
and listen, if like you're young, you're gonna have trouble playing defense because you don't know all the angles and all that stuff. But
that's more than that.
There's no excuse to be historically bad.
Defensive rating since February 8th, the trade deadline. The Jazz are 122.8, 30th in the NBA. 29th is the Toronto Raptors, who, again, have lost 15 in a row. They are 118.9, so they're almost three full points better. Well, I'll tell you.
Which, by the way, that's a canyon.
The difference between the next time you get to 3 points is, yeah, it's seven teams ahead of. There's between Toronto.
The defensive rating is a schism.
3 points better than Toronto is, yeah, seven teams better. So for that to be, there's seven teams equivalent between the Jazz and the next worst team in the NBA defensively. Let's see, where are the Jazz offensively?
So, yeah, we can get into the weeds on, okay, Bryce Sensabaugh can score at the NBA level, and have you seen how he's shooting, and 22 points and all this stuff, and it's like, well, I watched this guy get six dunks.
Yeah, no, the scoring's great. It's the easiest thing to judge if a player's doing well in the NBA. And defense is notoriously the hardest to figure out if they're doing it well. Because, like,
it's subjective.
Patrick Beverley can look like he's playing good defense because he slaps the floor and runs around and yells after a stop. Your friend Rusty Westbrook would tell us, yeah, he's got you all fooled. He's just running around out there. Like, are you actually impacting the game defensively? There's a lot more than just blocking shots. You know, there's a lot more than just running quickly. So I think that's an interesting part. I've been asked a lot. What should the Jazz do this offseason? We do my mailbag every Tuesday. And that was one of them. Like, prototype player, what would you add to the Utah Jazz? And she's like, man, they could use good defense anywhere. Anywhere.
Anywhere.
And, look, there's kids in the draft that are good defensive players. Reed Shepard at Kentucky's really good. Castle at UConn's really good. I'm not expecting a rookie to come in and change my defense. I think Taylor Hendricks is going to be a great defensive player. He doesn't know what he's doing right now, but, like, he alone is not good enough to do it. If the Jazz are going to spend some money or make trades or whatever they want to do, man, you got to start putting some defense on the floor.
And I do feel for them when they don't have John Collins or Walker Kessler and they traded away the clinic because Yurtseven.
Yep.
And who else has played big?
Kenny Lofton, buddy.
Okay.
Big Ken Lofton Jr.
You say big, he's like 6'5".
It's not the big I'm talking about.
Right, the big that counts in basketball, the height. Very short, man. That's not fair. He's not fair.
No, he's like 6'9". Yeah, he's just not 7 feet tall.
No.
Nor is he known as a defensive player.
And, you know, Šamanić likes to shoot, but he's not much of a deterrent at the rim, I'm afraid.
I will tell you, I'm not terribly worried about the team learning bad habits.
Because they're not going to be on the team much longer?
Because what team are we talking about? But if Keontae is going to be a long-term part of the team, Taylor Hendricks could be a long-term part of the team, maybe Bryce is. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But, like, the idea is you draft these rookies. Hopefully they turn into somebody if you're a Jazz fan. You want them to learn good defense. You want them to learn that, like, yeah, Will Hardy can say we're not negotiating defense. You have to play defense and you have to pass. But, like, no one's playing defense and they still get minutes. And what else is he supposed to do? There's not enough players to put out there otherwise.
You can't take away minutes from anybody because – what? Who are you going to play? You?
Right. Yeah. I've lost my eligibility.
Are you going to call Booner down from the broadcast perch?
But if you're worried about that, there is actually an area there where you could be learning some bad habits. And I will say that was one of the things that Donovan Mitchell never grew out of. He learned really bad defensive habits his rookie season. Why? Because the Jazz had good defenders around him. Ricky Rubio at one spot. I can't remember if Royce was coming up still at that point. I don't think he had like fully turned into Royce O'Neal. But you had Rudy Gobert. So you had bookended your defense with a good defensive point guard and a good center, and it was enough to get you where you needed to go. And Donovan's like, all I got to do is shoot? I think 22 shots a game as a rookie? No one gets this green light. Great. Life's good. Dante Exum was on that team, played some defense. Like, fine. Then Donovan never learned to play defense and never took accountability for it.
Backing up your point, I had Donovan on my show. The day after the draft, the introduction, and it was at the Grand America because the arena was being
renovated.
So we were at the Grand America, and they had all the rookies there. I'm trying to remember the other rookies besides Donovan. It was like three dudes. I was the guy that John Stockton made him draft from Gonzaga. And it was somebody else.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look. But anyway.
But do you know what the rap on Donovan? Do you know what he talked about in that very first interview?
Think Rick Pitino's just going to let you get on the floor?
That's what he said. He said, I'm a defensive guy. I play defense. I can come into this this roster and contribute immediately.
Oh, are you?
And to your point, I don't think Donovan Mitchell should be a bad defender. He's not tall, but he is long and super athletic.
Right.
You should not be you should not be a net negative on the defensive side, I think, if you've got Donovan Mitchell's aura.
Agreed.
Everything he's got going on. He's obviously not a moron either. So you can't tell me he can't be like Joe Ingles and learn angles and learn how to be a savvy defender. And he didn't. And he wasn't asked to from day one. He was asked to come in and shoot the ball, which no rookie is ever asked to do. He was lucky enough to be asked to do that. And, you know, we saw the same thing with Jimmer at BYU. Hey, Jimmer, go out there and guard. I don't know what you're talking about, Coach. I'm Jimmer. That's
not my job.
That's Jackson Emery's job.
By the way, Nigel Williams-Goss.
That's him? Yep, yeah. Nigel Williams-Goss. I told you, the guy that John Stockton made him draft from Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Who was the other guy? Was it...
Boy, that was a great draft for the Jazz, and also they traded Josh Hart that night. I think they gave away the pick. Josh Hart's turned into a superb NBA player. Anyways, neither here nor there.
Yeah, I still remember that day, though. Because we didn't think we were interviewing... It's funny to look at it now. We didn't think we were interviewing the team's next star.
No, by no means.
We thought we were interviewing a rookie guard who could come in. You know what's funny is that... And I never bought this, but the narrative around the team at the time was that Rodney Hood was going to be the team's best scorer and leaned upon to be the team's number one, you know, and that lasted for 0 minutes in a game. He was never that, and Donovan Mitchell was that. It was weird.
On draft night, the Utah Jazz traded Josh Hart and Thomas Bryant for Tony Bradley.
That's the one. Tony Bradley was the third.
Thomas Bryant had a better NBA career, still in the NBA, than Tony Bradley, and Josh Hart's a legit superb player. It was a good trade for the Jazz to get Donovan Mitchell and a horrendous trade to lose those two. Anyways, you got to teach some good habits. And that's why, honestly, I might be willing to bring in some veterans who teach good habits. Guys who, and you know what, that was kind of a flaw of Kelly Olynyk, was he wasn't always teaching the best habits, unless your habits were, as you like to say.
Oh, he was teaching all the best habits. What are you talking about?
Dive at somebody's knee when they're not looking.
Oh, man, I think.
Dislocate a shoulder or two.
Kelly should be in the league till he's 45 for that reason alone. If I'm getting a young, scrappy big, I'm bringing in the clinic and be like, all right, teach this guy your magic.
He's going to get hurt in practice. That's why you don't want Kelly anywhere near your young stars.
This guy your magic. You know how you win in the playoffs? You dislocate Kevin Love's shoulder.
It is interesting. Speaking of Josh Hart's a good example of this. And my beloved Knicks, who are falling apart at the seams because they just can't stay healthy, and Julius Randle's lost for the season. They said, we've got some decent talent. We need to put defensive players around him. We need to improve our defense. What are we going to do? You know what they did? They went and traded for a bunch of defensive players. Like, we kind of think defense is this abstract thing compared to offense. Like, well, you get a score, a 20-point-per-game score, and all of a sudden it's going to improve your offense. Like, yeah, Trae Young would come in and improve your offense right away. Good defensive players do the exact same thing. Like, it actually is pretty straightforward. Go and get good defensive players, and your defense will improve. They went out and got Isaiah Hartenstein, good defensive player. OG Anunoby, good defensive player. Josh Hart, good defensive player. All of a sudden, Julius Randle, who doesn't care on that side of the floor, is covered up because you have all these guys who are willing to play. Jalen Brunson's not a great defensive player.
Quite the opposite.
Little. Tiny. Wants to shoot 25 times a game.
Yep.
But put Josh Hart next to him, put all these guys who will defend, and you look a lot better. So that's if the Jazz are going to start cashing in these picks, which I'm not sure they're going to do this offseason, but you got to start getting defensive players. You have to start looking that direction, whether that's, you know, trying to sign a Drew Holiday in the offseason if you wanted to get old, just to set an example for your young players and start winning games right away. You can do that. It's actually not as hard as I think sometimes we make it out to be. I'm not saying it's not hard to be good, but if you want to improve certain things, go get the guys with the reputations that actually do those things.
Yeah, but that's not as fun as watching it go in the hoop, man.
It's definitely not. But you know what Orlando did? How does Orlando have the second-best defense in the NBA? They drafted a bunch of defensive guys.
Yep.
Every time they got into the NBA draft, they focused on defense over just offense. Even last year, a guy who's not playing, Anthony Black, best defensive guard in the draft. He's not playing right now. When he steps on the floor, he's going to be a great defensive player. Jalen Suggs.
and nobody wants to play them.
Gary Harris.
If they weren't allergic to putting it in the hoop, that would be helpful.
That would help. And that's their balance, right? They're going to have to say, well, we need a 20-point-per-game scorer. Are we going to go spend, you know, $30 million, $45 million next offseason on Paul George or whatever it is?
They're hoping Banchero is that, right?
And then they're going to need another guy. But yes, absolutely.
That's what
yes, that's their goal, though. They have their go-to scorer.
Because then all of a sudden, once you get into swapping defensive guys for offensive guys, then you're the Jazz in their last rendition.
In the second year of Donovan Mitchell.
And then it doesn't work.
Yeah, you
got to find
the balance.
From one extreme to the other. It would be better for Orlando if Banchero just went from 22 a game to 28 a game.
Yeah.
Because they're not asking him to play defense. He's the only player on the team they're not asking to play defense. I brought up Orlando stats, by the way, to see where they were in offensive rating. 23rd.
Oof, yeah. It's not good enough. You got to get better than that.
Second defensive rating over the entire season, 23rd.
How did Minnesota offensive. Get so good defensively? What did they do? They traded for a person named Rudy Gobert, who's the best defensive player on the planet. Like, it's not a science. It's not that difficult to do. Go get Rudy. You want to improve your defense? Because Cat is a terrible defensive player. Go get him. They drafted McDaniels. They added Ant, who's a terrific defender. They went and got some guys, though, who the focus is defense. And they made it work. Jazz were a good defensive team when they had Rudy Gobert. So go get your good defensive players. And that's why, if I get asked, like, who should the Jazz target in the draft? I honestly haven't looked at the draft that much yet. I will when the season comes to an end in six games. Get guys who play both sides of the floor. Because yep. you can't do anything without that.
I've been saying this for years. It's the reason I love Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Just go get a guy who plays both sides of the
both
floor.
Both ends. Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown, for that matter.
I would rather a guy, at this point, if I'm the Utah Jazz, who's a 6 out of 10 defensive offensively and an 8 out of 10 defensively versus the other way around, right? Like, if this guy has some red flags about whether or not he's going to become a good offensive player, but you know he's going to be a good defender, I think I could probably make that work. I think I could probably figure out a way to make that happen because spacing in the NBA now, I know it's critical. It feels like you can use that to help guys who aren't traditionally good offensive players find a role.
Or you just go out there and draft LeBron's kid.
Get Bronny.
Get Bronny in, see what he can do. Spend one of those first rounders on him.
If you missed it this morning, he's both declared for the draft and entered the transfer portal, which means he's not going to hire an agent because Rich Paul is already working for him behind the scenes, so he doesn't need to officially hire anybody. Get some workouts, go to the combine, see if he has a chance to get drafted.
You know, I genuinely feel bad for him. I shouldn't, because he's going to make it into the NBA without being good enough to make it in the NBA, probably, but the pressure of being LeBron's child would be difficult in and of itself, and he's not the best high school player in the country.
He's not one of the 60 best players in college basketball that should get drafted next year.
No, he should transfer to go find a good coach, develop his skills, and see how it goes.
Even if he doesn't get to play with his dad.
Which should not be a consideration at all for him or his father. That shouldn't be a thing. That is one of the dumbest things, and I bet you it comes to fruition because it's just the type of thing that LeBron would consider important. But this is the dumbest thing ever. Why wouldn't you want your son to be in the best position possible to succeed? Not grab a headline being LeBron and Bronny playing together that last 10 minutes.
Right.
LeVar Ball, remember his headlines when he got, what was the crappy son?
LiAngelo,
a camp invite for the Hornets. And then LeVar was like, three of my boys playing in the league. And it's like, not really.
Also.
But what did that bring him is my point. It didn't help him. It didn't help anybody. Everybody forgot about it 10 minutes later. I don't think we've heard from LeVar since.
And I know everyone's like, we've never seen this before. We've never seen a father and a son play. Here's the thing. Look at how many good 37, 38, 39-year-old athletes there are. There's a ton. Like, we're in this weird spot where guys are playing until they're in their late 30s and they're staying very relevant and at least good enough to be on a roster. LeBron and Bronny are not going to be the last father-son duo that have a chance to play in the NBA together.
Nor does that matter. Nor does it matter.
But if you thought it mattered, it's only going to matter for a couple of years because we're going to start seeing more 38-year-old, 39-year-old guys with kids that are going into the NBA.
Do you think we've heard of Ken Griffey Jr. because he was awesome or because he played for 10 seconds on the same roster as his dad?
Right. Would it be a footnote if K Jr., had been terrible and then played on the same team?
Never made it out of double A.
Nobody cared. Yeah, it was an artificial last game of the season. They call him up. put him in the show so he can play with his dad. Nobody would have cared.
Ever.
It's that Ken Griffey Jr. was the best player in the sport at that age.
Turned into the best player in the sport.
And his dad was still good. His dad was still playable.
That's it.
Right. That's a very
good actually
comment.
A footnote in both of their careers that doesn't matter to anybody. So I don't. That storyline bugs me. Is Bronny good enough to succeed in the NBA or not? And if the answer is no, go back to college.
Especially
go back to the lab. Work it out for a couple of years.
Especially if the potential is for him to get there. And there is there with Bronny. He's got the body. He's super athletic. If he can improve his skills to get there, he could be a long-term NBA player.
So having him make a decision that is bad for him just because of some feel-good headline, I think is foolish.
I'm with you.
But we'll see what he does. I hope LeBron gives him the advice. Go find a good coach.
Go play at Iowa State.
And get a lot better.
They want to play defense. You want to play defense. That's your matchup.
Yeah.
You're not going to be an offensive star. Go play at Iowa State.
And then LeBron needs to say, I'm going to stay out of it and let you make the best decisions for you, which is probably more difficult to do than just saying it. But I think that would be the best course for him.
And no, the Jazz shouldn't draft him with hopes that it would bring LeBron to Utah.
Absolutely not. Don't LeBron is 55.
Don't do that. That's stupid.
And then you have to turn over control of the entire franchise to LeBron and Rich Paul, which you don't want to do, I would guess.
Yeah.
Maybe they do. Do you think Clutch, I know we're over. Do you think Clutch retains its current status once LeBron retires?
Nope.
I don't either. All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. This isn't sports, Ben, but did you see this story on Easter that somebody stole $30 million in cash from a money storage facility in California? That's got to be the biggest robbery in history, right?
Maybe cash heist, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, not like, I mean, even art. I mean, I don't know. Well, there's been some pretty priceless works of art stolen, I suppose. But $30 million in cash?
Hitting them on Easter. They didn't even recognize it until the next day. They didn't realize it until Monday that the money was gone.
Inside job, right? Gotta be.
Someone knew something.
Someone knew
how to get there. Nobody would be around.
Where the money was? Are we in the wrong line of work? Although I don't think I'm smart enough for this thing.
No, I know I'm not.
And I'd immediately go out and buy something stupid, and the FBI would be like, yeah, we know it was you.
According to the LA Times, the previous largest cash heist in the city happened in September 12th, 1997, when $19 million was stolen.
Did they catch those people?
Those suspects were eventually caught.
Do we assume that they're going to get these people?
Oh, yeah.
Or do we assume that they're on a Caribbean island already? That's what I'd do.
I think you got to do you've seen Goodfellas. You can't buy a fur coat.
No, right? You got to lay low.
You can't. The problem is with $30 million. This is why I don't understand art heists unless you know the Silk Road on the dark web to be able to sell the world's most famous paintings. How you would ever do it.
That's the key then, right? Because you know there's billionaires somewhere that have like a secret art vault of stolen stuff.
Of course. I suspect you could go overseas and find.
Yeah. All Someone sorts of stuff.
Willing to buy whatever so they can have it in their private collection on their yacht or whatever. $30 million at least is you can spend it.
Kind of. Don't they keep track of the bills and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't. That's the thing. Do they know every serial code on every number that's going to pop up as soon as it gets deposited to a bank and they can track it back? Then you're in trouble.
I think that's where you got to launder it, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can't go wash it in Vegas, though, right? Like, you can't just go play blackjack $30 a table.
No,
maybe you can.
You buy cryptocurrency. Isn't that the whole reason it started?
Yeah. But people are going to recognize if you're buying $30 million in Dogecoin.
Well, you know, piece it out or whatever, but it's untraceable. That's the point. I figured that's why they started mining the stupid stuff in the first place.
Absolutely,
like,
of course,
yes. They're like, oh, man, we just made $1 billion in cocaine smuggling. We got to do something with this thing.
Something. Yes, sure. Absolutely. Why would you create an alternative currency? Only to wash the clean
only
currency.
Only to launder money. Yeah, right. So you buy a bunch of Dogecoin and then you hit Jamaica.
Maybe. pretty volatile, that Dogecoin. Be careful with that.
Well, I'm not a crypto weirdo. I don't know what the hot thing is these days. Maybe jump into the NFT world.
What's Ethereum doing? Yeah. Don't buy those monkeys. Those NFT monkeys that everyone's buying for $150,000 that you can't sell now.
So
worthless.
I've got a really good buddy that was super into that stuff, and I follow him on Twitter, and he would be tweeting about that nonstop.
I don't think $500,000 one weekend.
Don't think I've seen him tweet about NFTs in 2 years.
No, they're non-fungible. That's why you want them. There's not a real thing there.
Got to chalk that up to a mistake. That was a mistake. I made a huge mistake.
I mean, $30 million is a substantial amount of fungibleness, right? Fungiality. That's a lot of cash. Like, I hate having $80 in my wallet.
Well, it's got to be heavy at first.
Right. You got to have a truck. You've got to have a whole system. I mean, it's like Heat. It's like Ocean's 11. Like, you've got to have vans to move $30 million. It's not a single suitcase. You got to do this solo too, right? It's got to be a DB Cooper situation. I don't think it's possible to do solo, but I don't trust anyone else to do this. You couldn't do this with another person.
Well, that's why you murder everybody after.
Sure.
I mean, that's usually the way things are done, right?
Yeah.
That was the lesson from Goodfellas. That's what De Niro does, right? He walks around and murders everybody.
Close all the loose ends.
Yeah. You could do that part.
Think so?
Yeah.
You think I have that in me? I've never been pushed to that place, but I respect that you think I could.
Oh, sure. Dig deep.
So I'm the kill guy in the heist crew.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you?
Oh, I'm watch.
You're the rat.
He's the getaway driver.
Do we think Jake is like a very courteous driver? It's the problem.
Very much.
Jake like doesn't like road rage. Jake doesn't speed.
I do not.
Takes a while to pull out of his spot. We always park pretty close to each other, and I leave 4 minutes before you do every day after the show.
I got
to
get it together.
Yeah, right. That's the problem. Like,
he's the lookout guy that falls asleep, and then they get caught.
Probably. I was tired.
What happened with Jake? Oh, his wife called mid-heist.
Yeah, I had to go.
He had to go.
I had to bounce.
Daughter forgot her lunch.
Oh, man.
So we had to bring lunch.
It was an emergency. I forgot to make her turkey roll-up this morning.
The youngest got sick at the daycare, so we had to go pick up.
Yeah. We've got to have priorities here.
So I'm left holding $30 million in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard.
Should have hired somebody else, I guess.
You want for these guys to get away with it?
No.
Oh, I am.
Why? Somebody's paying for that $30 million, and that's not fair.
Oh, it's federally insured. They just print that money up again. Get yours. I'm not endorsing stealing $30 million.
You are, though.
But if you're on the back end of having done it already, see how long we can make it last.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, narc. This is why you're not in my heist crew.
I'm anti-stealing.
This is not why you're in my heist crew.
Rooting for them to get away with it?
They've already gotten partially away.
They didn't earn that dough.
Arguable?
No.
That's an arguable fact.
Factual.
They got the money, and they're gone now.
That's not earning it.
Sure. The guy who stole my PlayStation, who broke into my house, didn't technically earn it.
Nope.
But he got away with it. At least I think he's gotten away with it. I haven't been followed up by the SLCPD.
Did not earn it. But breaking into my house was really hard, so he kind of earned it. No, that's not how it works. That's not it.
What's the most legit way to... Can you actually earn $30 million in your lifetime?
Me?
Do you think there's a way to do it? Not you.
No. Yes, for people to earn, it happens all the time. People earn $30 million.
People make $30 million. Earn and make are a different term here.
No, because earn legitimately is earning it. Whether you think, like Ben Anderson thinks they deserve it or not, doesn't mean you can change the definition of a word.
Medical discovery, $30 million. No problem. You've earned $30 million. You put the work in, you go to school, you learn how to bond different whatever DNA strands. Sure, you've earned $30 million.
But you don't think like Jeff Bezos, who changes retail forever, has
sold
earned
books
anything?
Online? Because you started selling books online? No, because I know the lady who owns the used bookstore by my house. She's doing the same work. She's now worth $30 million. No one's giving her $30 million.
I don't think it was just about moving books. But this says a lot about you. Sarah, are you rooting for them to get away with it or not?
I'm saying what Jeff Bezos did to get his $30 billion and what this guy did to get his $30 million, or a woman, it's probably not all that dissimilar.
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You hope they get caught today. Because you're a good and decent person.
I mean, if they went through all that trouble and right. they got away with it, isn't that kind of on the company for not having better security?
No.
Boom. He's exposing holes. He's doing them a favor. I'm with you. He's doing them a favor. You got to have somebody working on Easter. That's your problem. You gave everyone Easter Sunday off.
Have you seen did you see the California politician? Like they are having a problem with people stealing the catalytic converters mm-hmm. off of cars. And so the politician's response was to rail against the car manufacturers.
Get rid of catalytic converters.
No, they were saying, oh, you make them too easy to steal.
They are exposed. If you climb under the car, it's just sitting there. And you can just weld them into a new car. And they cost
$500. Stealing them. Do something about the people stealing them. Don't blame Toyota for not making some.
Putting them behind Kevlar.
See, this is the thinking. Like, I'm rooting for these people to get away with it. No. They should have made it harder to steal. Maybe. Not the point.
As someone who's spent too much money on my life on catalytic converters entirely, I'm with you. The catalytic converter thing is an issue. People got to stop stealing catalytic converters.
How dare you, Toyota? Well, what about the people stealing it? Why don't we talk about that for a few minutes?
If you were to steal something worth 30 mil, what's the best thing?
To steal? Worth
like
$30 million?
A bunch of diamonds?
Probably.
Because you just like carry them in a little bag?
Yeah.
Could put them in a sock in
but
your drawer?
It's tough to fence diamonds that
Yeah, I don't know how
too.
To sell diamonds.
Little hot diamonds?
Yeah. I told you, I was in Vegas for Summer League in a past life. And I was standing out in the valet at one of the hotels. And I found a $100 chip on the ground. I didn't know what it was. I saw a black and white chip. I don't gamble at all, so I don't know what the different colors are. And I stepped on it. And I thought, like, I'm going to see if anyone comes looking for it. And if they look for it, I'll give them their $100 back. Like, if someone's like, oh, shoot, I dropped the thing. Nobody was around. Nobody came back. So I stole that $100 and I put it in my pocket. I was so scared to go down to the table where you exchange your money to get the money back with the fear that this might be a counterfeit
thing.
Chip. And I'm going to get arrested for trying to pass a counterfeit chip. I wasn't. I got my money. It was nice. But I was that worried that, like, a legitimate chip that had the logo of the casino I was outside of, that clearly some bozo opened their suit jacket and it fell out. I was terrified to go to the place to do exactly what you're supposed to do with those, which is cash them in. So, yeah, I wouldn't know what to do with diamonds, famous painting, cash.
Ben would be the guy that gets away with it, and then the second that people start to suspect him, he breaks.
Absolutely. 100%.
Immediately.
I'm the lady who gave Shohei the ball back. 100%.
I don't think that's you. I think apparently you're much more devious than
that. Well, I'm rooting for the Shohei lady to get away.
She earned that ball.
Did she? She just took it.
She caught it. That's earning it, and that's in within
this
the rules.
This guy caught $30 million in his suitcase and his van while he was wearing gorilla-style fatigues to break into this money heist.
Yeah,
what is this
way,
building? What are these buildings? That it's a cash business?
Money storage facility. I had no idea such things existed.
You mean a bank?
So there's just $30 million stacked up in some random warehouse? Have you seen a picture of it? It looks just like a random warehouse. Look at it. Doesn't it look like a bank?
I guess I drive by all these warehouses, and we don't have as many as some places do. I don't know what's going on in any of those warehouses.
Oh, yeah. Well,
what are you guys doing in there?
They did their research.
You got $30 million cash? That's why Jake is right. It has to be an inside job.
Absolutely.
There's that. They make that building look like that on purpose.
Or
right?
Maybe they overheard a worker talking about where he works, and then they scouted it out.
Still technically an inside job, even if you overhear it.
Okay, because you got inside
info. You got inside info. All right, stay tuned. We'll wrap up the show coming up next.
$30 million is not even that much money anymore.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben. Want to remind you about our friends at Peach Doors and Windows. Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. Ben, DJ Burns, my favorite basketball player left in the NCAA tournament, the center from NC State, has made it clear that he has zero interest in playing football.
Okay.
Can I tell you how aggravated I would be if I was DJ Burns and the number one storyline about me was,
why aren't you an offensive tackle?
Why aren't you playing football? You're like, I'm in the Final Four playing basketball.
Playing very well, actually. Yeah.
And I'm sure that he doesn't think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft or anything, but I'm also sure that he thinks that he's probably got a professional basketball playing career ahead of him, which honestly, he probably does. I don't know if
he'll... May not be in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll stick in the NBA. I'm guessing he'll make a roster as a rookie or has the possibility to do so. But certainly in his mind, he's not thinking that I'm not a basketball player. And everybody's coming to me and saying, hey, have you ever thought about playing football? Duh. I woke up this morning and I thought, what is this strange sport football you're talking about? And not to mention, you're basically calling him a fat guy to his face.
I guess it's the same way when we see seven-footers. We're like, oh, I wonder if he played basketball. And football players always do this, or football people always do this. 6'9", what is he, 270, 275, quick feet. They're like, brother, you are a left tackle. You are a right tackle tomorrow. Give me 6 weeks to teach you how to use your hands and use your feet, and I think I can turn you into something. And you can go make a bunch of money as a tackle in the NFL. But you're right. He's like, yeah, I've been training my whole life to be a basketball player. And yes, you know what? He probably played football at some point in his life.
That, what you said about him and the football thing has been true probably since he was 14.
Yep. In the wrong sport. Yeah, playing the wrong sport.
Right. How many football coaches are like, oh, man, I'll make you the best tackle? He doesn't want to do that, yeah. Apparently.
I mean, people said it about Karl Malone forever, too.
Yeah.
Right? It was always Carl's thing. Yeah, if he could be a tight end, be a tackle, whatever he wants to do.
I'm in the Final Four.
I'm doing my thing.
I'm currently playing basketball.
I'm the guy right now.
In the Final Four. And all you bozos can ask me about is whether or not I want to play football. I'm going to feed you your own backside. That would be so annoying to me. And this is like a headline on ESPN. Not interested in playing football. Why is that the storyline around the guy? Can't you at least give him a couple of weeks to get done with his basketball career?
Right. Let him wrap it up. We see guys make the jump. We see good NBA players switch over and play wide receiver. I think that's probably a more realistic transformation for a guy who's never played a lot of football than tackle.
Give me a sports writer you really respect or somebody you'd listen to.
Chris Camerani.
What if Chris read one of your jazz pieces and he sat down with you, Ben, and he goes, God, Ben, you ever thought about writing ad copy?
I would take that a different way. But yeah, right. I don't know. I'm doing it here.
Man, you would have a career writing ads, bro. You should really do that. You'd have a real – I mean, I'm looking at your writing style here, and it pretty much stinks for a sports writer. But for an ad copywriter, that's you, bro.
Yeah.
You can make $1 million.
Like, I don't know. I've kind of worked here, and someone's employing me at the moment.
And it's going okay,
it's
I think.
It's going okay.
Yeah, right. I think I'm doing pretty well on this beat. Yeah, but, I mean, writing ads.
Let me tell you what's better.
Right. Can you imagine how insulting that'd be?
Here's the thing. The problem is it's not even people who know better than DJ Burns. It's people who know less than DJ Burns telling him to switch to football.
Right.
One thing, if Chris were to talk to me, Chris is a better writer than I am. If Chris wanted to tell me, hey, I think you'd be better, I'd be like, oh, he might be onto something. If it was somebody who was way worse, who was like, oh, yeah, I am a corporate copywriter for some company that never has to copyright, because there are good writers that exist doing that as well. And it's like,
oh,
you're in the wrong business. I'm like, how would you know?
No, I'm... Honestly, I'm glad you said that. I'm not trying to insult ad copywriters because that 100% is a talent and a skill. I more meant somebody suggests you do something entirely different than you're doing now.
Can I tell you something I don't understand when it comes to DJ Burns' name? And this is a lot of people. So technically, he's DJ Burns Jr. What does the J stand for in DJ? Junior.
Yeah, I would think so.
Right?
I know.
His name is Dwight Keith Burns Jr. So he's not DJ Burns Jr. The J is the junior.
That's not always true.
But in this case, it is. So we get a lot of DJs where the J is junior, and then we still call him junior. You're not DJ Burns Jr. You're DJ Burns. The J is mixed in for junior. So drop the junior or drop the J. You can't. You're not junior junior. Dwight Junior Burns Jr. is not your name.
Well, I don't know why Steve on Smith needs to be senior. Yeah, we got it. That's why it's not junior.
Marcus Morris put senior on his jersey.
Yeah. We got it. You've got a son that
you've named
goes junior. Yeah. That's why it says junior next to his name.
Right.
Just assumed it's senior.
He's 2.0, but you don't need to put 1.0 on your first thing.
No.
You are the first.
You are.
You're the thing.
Yeah.
But otherwise.
Now, if you're at like, if your cousins are talking about you and your family and they need to make a difference between DJ Senior and DJ Junior, well, then that's acceptable.
Yeah.
But if we're watching a basketball game and we see Marcus Morris, I'm not going to confuse him for his son.
Yeah, you know, I do this in writing, and I'm actually not sure how we were talking about, you know, putting respect on Russell Westbrook's name earlier. Like, when I talk about Kyra Lewis with the Jazz, I write Kyra Lewis. Well, technically, he's Kyra Lewis Jr. Kenneth Lofton Jr. All these guys are juniors. Their dads have their same name or whoever they got their name from. But I don't always put Kenneth Lofton Jr. I don't always put Kyra Lewis Jr. when I'm writing.
You should not.
When I'm writing, you know I'm talking about Kyra Lewis. You know you recognize I'm not talking about his father, who has nothing to do with the story I'm writing.
I do.
So I can trust my audience that when I'm talking about the Utah Jazz and Kyra Lewis, I'm not talking about the father of this person who no one's ever heard of?
It is absolutely unnecessary, yes.
I think so, right?
Yes.
But I don't know if that's AP appropriate. I don't know AP style format if I'm supposed
now,
to.
Now, if Ken Griffey's on the same team as his dad, well,
one's junior.
Yeah, then maybe
senior.
You want to specify there. But yeah, I don't know what Kyra Lewis's dad is doing, but it's not playing for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, he ain't suiting up in Utah.
So I'd say continue doing what you're doing.
Okay.
I do not think it's necessary.
It's not a disrespect to the player. It's a sign of respect for my audience that knows who I'm talking about.
Steve on Smith corrected me on air. I was like, joining us now, the great Steve Smith from Utah. He's like, hey, Steve Smith Sr. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Is your son on the phone?
He was in person. Yeah. So, of course, I was like, all right, Mr. Smith Sr., sir.
Okay. Senior.
Sure. And honestly, I'll call anybody whatever they want to be called, but like it does not make any sense to me, yes.
If you have a son, you have two daughters.
I do.
Are you gonna go little JJ, little Jake Jr.? Triple J?
I had considered it, but I don't think my wife's on board.
We don't do a lot of juniors for women.
No.
I've never met a like Jesse Jr.
Well, Jesse could be a guy's name.
Sure. Okay. Lisa Jr. I don't see a lot of Lisa Juniors out there. Mary Ann Jr.
It's a guy thing.
It's a guy thing. Weird. Guys are so uncreative. We can't think of anyone's name.
We can't
think of anyone's name but our own. Let's put a junior on the back of it.
Apparently, okay, we're good. Hans and Scotty coming up next. Apparently, our traffic was like downtown D.C. today.
Stunning.
Hanson, Scotty G are coming up next.
Thanks, Sarah Jr.
We'll talk to you on Monday. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.